zones to get out of the lot. There's parking, Sandra says parking coupons in the back. And we're going to quit today at 4:30 because people have planes to catch and we'll be running out of time. But Barry and other people will be around. Certainly don't just like wander away. If there are people here, people should make the most of it and keep talking. Okay, we're going to have, I know on the agenda it says that there's going to be 3 speakers. There's actually going to be 4, not counting, counting myself as 4. I'm only going to go through people that ask about, like, what is the foundry, Oboe Foundry. So I'm just going to really quickly go through it because all of these things are, Oboe Foundry is really an outgrowth, if I think of Oboe. It was certainly the idea, I mean, there's nothing here that conflicts what started, when we started the open biomedical ontology sort of effort, none of this really is in conflict. This is just the natural outgrowth and trying to make it more smelted and robust. So it's, you know, the goal is to have ontologies that are intelligible to the biologists and curators and annotators and users and clinicians, basically the people. They shouldn't be this weird sort of mystical language that only the experts can use. They should be used in intelligible. We want, at the same time, we want portable robustness, probably the least intelligent part that we have to deal with, our computers. And they're probably the stupidest part of this whole thing, are computers. And we have to explain things formally so that computers can understand them. Relative stability with versioning and tracking, and like Bernard was talking today, tracking at the level of terms, changes to terms. What they want, we want them to be compatible, interoperable, and they should have some support for logic-based reasoning. So, the words that are invisible to you, I will say. I'm sorry, I copied the slides and I didn't change like the background color. These came from a dark background, so anyway, the ontology is open and available to be used in all. That's one of the very first principles. So when you agree, when you sign up and say, okay, I'm with this, this is a good policy, you're basically agreeing to open. You agree in advance to collaborate with other ontology developers. So if we're wanting to do cross products, you've got to be able to come to meetings like this and talk to one another. So just it's evidence that you're willing to collaborate by virtue of being here. Next, the ontology can be instantiated in some, you know, commonly used formal language. Basically, you want the computer to be able to parse it. It needs a syntax, and we don't want to have to write a syntax for every ontology, so we'd like to minimize the number of syntaxes that we use. It should have a unique identifier space. I don't think that's a big deal. There should be versionings, at the ideally at the level of terms. They should be well scoped as far as the content. It's like this covers this part, and so that you, as much as possible, you can have clearly delineated content. You need textual definitions that are interpretable. I know Barry would like all the textual definitions to be Aristotelian in format, but you know, we'll do what we can. You want it to be well documented so people can find out about it. You want to have people to use it, because what good is an ontology in and of itself? And you also have defined relationships, and there's a whole slide on that. And basically, one of the biggest parts of repeat is to commit to collaborating, to resolve disagreements, because we all know this is about semantics and understanding one another, and that means working sometimes when you don't understand the rules that the other person is playing by, to use Monty's metaphor. You may not know what assumptions they have, but you still have to sit there and talk it over and work it out. The other thing is to agree on the relationships between the terms, because this will make them interoperable, because if your computer is going to be reasoning, and when it sees a part of relationship, if you define part of it means you've cut it up in pieces of pie, as opposed to this is what happens over time, or some other ways of doing parts of, then the inferences on those two different things by the computer should be done differently. So you have to really agree on relationships. And that's all I have. And so the 3 speakers are going to be Chris Shute, because I don't think we've heard enough from the clinical end of things, and so I dragged Chris into this. And then Chris Mungle, and then Owen is, he's going to wrap it all up and give us something to go home with that we can, actually, a plan of action. It was a good lunch. I thought.
put that down on your evaluation form.
Since I'm an add-on, I'm going to try to be very brief just have eight slides. In clinical medicine, I think few people would disagree with the precedent that we start with a patient. If we're very clever, we could fuss about the labels on these boxes, but we collect information and records and whatever, genomic information. We use that to create medical knowledge, guidelines, and feed the whole process back. And the question is, what is the center or the hub around which this wheel of knowledge, this samsara of learning, actually operates? And we could quibble about whether it's ontology or vocabularies or terminologies. I think we can agree it's consistent with the precepts of the Obo Foundry. No argument there. But it gets at this notion of what is disease. Furthermore, there are these processes of data, of inference, of knowledge management, and of decision support that invoke logic, that invoke the use of these ontologies, these information spaces, to achieve that task of learning new knowledge about the patient. Okay, we can agree on that. Here's my buddy Linnaeus. You all remember him. He still tortures high school students to this day, learning binomial nomenclature. But he tried to do that with disease and failed miserably. I'm sure many of you have not read Genera Mammorum. I actually have a copy. It's in Latin, but that's all right. The idea was he did not have a sufficient pathophysiologic appreciation or understanding of disease. Nobody in his century did, to make a reasonable classification or a disease ontology. For example, he said our friend rabies was a psychiatric disease, which at some level of manifestation is accurate. I mean, you foam at the mouth, you go mad, it's obviously a psychiatric disease. He knew nothing about the infectious theory of disease. He knew nothing about rhabdoviridae, never mind its role in the etiology of that disease. So his, if you will, conceptualization in a disease ontology was woefully incomplete. The metaphor here is, so is ours. We still haven't a clue about what causes most diseases, and the model, as has been articulated with the pure ontology and the full causal relationship, we'll come back to that. This is the granularity thing. Patient data is really granular, and aggregation of it for multiple purposes ain't. And here's our friend ICD over on an axis of granularity so that if we want to deal with highly detailed information to make that wheel of knowledge turn, we clearly want to do it at this end. And insight gained at levels of gross classifications, and I use that word advisedly, are not necessarily going to help us make that wheel turn faster, simply because, not that they're intrinsically bad or evil or fundamentally inadequate, but they topically exist at an inappropriate level of specification to drive the kind of inferences that we want in clinical medicine. Here's my chasm of despair, for those of you that were wondering. This was data carefully made up on the back of an envelope after three glasses of wine, which basically says those biologists do interesting things and those clinical informatics people do interesting things. They just don't talk to each other. I never talk to Susie if I can possibly help it. So
I noticed you moved tables.
That's true. And then there's the level of specificity. And this harkens back to work done by Scott Bloy in the 1980s. Smart guy, Scott. He said, doctors have a bad task in front of them. They have to figure out things at a molecular level, genomic, physiologic, cellular tissue organ, and sociology. I mean, you've got a mad family or, a kid brought up in a bad environment. That's a clinically relevant concept. Most of the discussion that has gone on in this little meeting has focused at these layers, if you will, of clinical conceptual thinking. Not that that's bad. It's okay to think there. But that ain't all there is to it. We have to also think of the environment, of public health, of nutrition, of society, of everything else, if we're going to entertain notions of disease. Maybe malnutrition in could be a social phenomenon, not actually a molecular phenomenon. So that begs the question, where is our friend clinical disease? So notions of disease are inextricably bound to an underpinning knowledge base. There's our friend Linnaeus, who blew it big time. And I submit, so will we, at various degrees of incompleteness. Manifestation occurs across multiple planes of understanding, from molecular to social. and it's if we're going to have knowledge bases to premise an understanding of disease, we need that breadth of knowledge, not just molecular, not just genomic, but other levels of understanding. Boundaries across clinical observational elements, and by elements I mean the usual suspects here, observations, findings, syndromes, disease, genotype, haplotype, epigenomic change. I mean, we can go on and on. I think you get the gist. I didn't enumerate exhaustively, but I think you get the sense. But boundaries across these levels of what I call observational elements, I'm asserting, and I think Kent was saying the same thing, are highly relativistic. Depends upon what we know at any given point in time. Linnaeus would do it differently from Kent, who might do it differently from somebody 300 years from now. You are another Linnaeus, Kent. And are rapidly changing and probably serve, now this is the controversial point, probably serve little practical purposes trying to shave where those boundaries exist.
So you can't have it both ways. If they are relativistic, then there's nothing there to change. We just have these cultures' beliefs, those cultures' beliefs. But you say that they are both relativistic and rapidly changing. Which is a bit like saying they are both such that I don't know anything about them, but they are green.
Think of it as a propagation phenomenon. Some discovery, Susie might discover something biologically brilliant about fruit flies that has relevance to human disease. It will take time for that community to inform the other community. They're you know, ripples on the pond kind of deal, and you get ripples from multiple epicenters. In that sense, they're relativistic and rapidly changing, because now we're talking about the harmonic surface of the pond.
Okay, and then I would submit that the Oboe Foundry is designed to speed up that ripple effect.
Last slide. Would a modern multiaxial disease ontology, perhaps with or without being a component of the Oboe Foundry, be a useful thing to have? Well, I think everybody, including Kent, said explicitly, we believe in this. This is the future. Let us see the promised land. However, today, I think what has been articulated by the clinical side of the room is that'd be a real short ontology. We don't got much to put in there if you believe in these modern multiaxial, you know, non-multiple inheritance, purely mechanistic attributions of reality. And let's not get into discussions of what is reality. I would further assert that it would have virtually no clinical utility because it would not resonate with the clinical culture, at least not for a while. And its brevity, now this is a very, very controversial statement, but because the darn thing is going to be so small, because we don't know much, we're sort of not that far beyond Linnaeus, its utility for annotation would be illusory. However, that all being said, that's not to say don't go there, don't do this. Quite the contrary, because it is the future. But recognize that it's serving as a template for knowledge, and that begs whether it should be done in the context of an ontology, whereas ontologies may or may not be the most appropriate framework for hanging knowledge. You were first.
I don't really understand why it would be so small. If one of the axes would be location of the disease, and location would be just given by the location relation of the disease to the to an anatomy ontology, then you could fit a lot of stuff already there.
So now you're getting into partial ontology representations. Maybe that's okay, but as long as everybody understands that it's a gross underspecification of disease.
Well, if you have your example, Kent's example is heart disease, or it's something more complex, but you know, if you have heart disease, we don't know anything more specific, but we could put the term in the ontology and link it to with the location relation to what is located obviously at the heart. I think of course that this is underspecified, but you can at least get started. You don't have necessarily only a very small list of diseases.
Okay.
Another axis where you probably know a lot about is about processes, which processes are inter.
For the anatomy, for the location, we have that already. So
There was a question. Why would it be so small if one of the axes would be location of the disease?
These bold assertions premise upon a more complete representation, assuming a more complete representation is going to be useful. What you're arguing, and it has validity, is that, well, gosh, even partial representations can have utility. All right, I'm okay with that. But then, as Olivia says, the world is full of partial representations. It becomes, in a sense, an exercise of synthesizing them into a common basis, which might be your goal. But I still think that those would have, at least for the time being, limited clinical utility, because most of us, when we're trying to do that circle, are, you know, learning from what we do to our patients so that we can hopefully do it better the next time, are focused very myopically on signs, symptoms, findings, syndromes. Deep truth is irrelevant clinically.
Research, it's very valuable.
Yeah. Since these are stolen minutes, I withdraw from the floor so that other people whose time this really is can say what they mean to say. Chris.
So while you walk from the floor, I'm going to say what I wanted to say, which is that we are already working in several big European Union projects with hospitals containing clinicians who are using genetics, genomics, microwave technology on a daily basis as part of their clinical work, and who need the kinds of tools that we were talking about earlier for doing that clinical work. I can't believe that you don't have such people in the neighborhood.
What do you want?
The laser pointer.
Oh, that's my personal laser pointer. I'm going to take it away, but you can use it for now. Sure. Oh, I have to leave.
Well, that's it.
That's a good one.
Nice slide.
Color scheme is impressive.
You think this is intentional?
I'm just going to continue from what Susie was saying and talk a bit about the actual organization of the Oboe Foundry, and then we can chat about how an ontology of disease or ontologies that we would need relating to disease could fit into the Oboe Foundry. So I'm going to talk specifically about how the Oboe Foundry is divided, because one of the goals of the Oboe Foundry is to have, as Susie mentioned, a set of kind of like hopefully orthogonal representations that will cover the whole of biomedical reality. And that involves coordination of a huge number of ontologies, and we don't want just a big hodgepodge of ontologies in there. They have to be organized somehow. So the idea is that the foundry is kind of, if you will, kind of split into partitions, and these partitions are divided in terms of what kinds of entities they are in the ontology. The granularity biomedical reality that the ontology covers, this slightly controversial one as to whether the ontology deals with canonical entities or variant entities or pathological entities. And also another important thing is kind of species specificity. Often it's kind of like, depending on where you're coming from, it's maybe assumed that you're doing something human specific or something that covers all organisms. And the goal is to be orthogonal, and this allows you to kind of like practice kind of normalized modular design, as has been kind of like mentioned and written about by Alan Retcher and other people several times. And also the definitions are important too. We will come to them. No, the mouse pointer is moving, but it's not doing. Well, let's try again. Okay, so the first division I mentioned is by the kind of entity, and hopefully you're familiar with these terms by now, but And it, you know, these terms themselves come from kind of like philosophy, but it turns out that they work perfectly for the, at least the existing ontologies in OBO, and they tend to kind of like organize quite nicely. For instance, the Go biological process ontology is a process, and I'm showing kind of like just a random sampling of all OBO ontologies here rather than ones that are specifically in the Foundry. So we've got continuance and our independent continuance, the actual kind of physical objects and so forth, and these kind of like slightly trickier guys, the dependent continuance. And this is where we have things like functions, qualities, which I'll mention a bit more, the Peto ontology, phenotypes, traits, disease, conditions, dispositions, all these kind of things that require some kind of independent continuant as a bearer. So the other division is by granular level, and these are some of the, in the current reformation of the gene ontology, these are going to be the new kind of like granular levels of biological process. We're taking it down to kind of multi-organism, multicellular organism, cellular, and beneath that you've got your kind of like chemical entities as well. So it's quite difficult growing with this. Generated a lot of discussion yesterday, and I don't know if we want to kind of like return to that, but I just want to say that it's, I think, at least in practical purposes, it's really important to kind of like think about this when designing your ontology, because if, for example, the fly anatomy ontology had decided to build the ontology such that it covered all the various ranges of mutant fly phenotypes, they would have been there forever, and you would have ended up with a very weak ontology that doesn't really say much at all, because you have to cover all these weird flies with legs coming out of their head and eyes on their legs and so on. So we have our canonical ontologies, which include the gene ontology and the FMA, and these slightly trickier guys here are the pathological entities, including diseases, mutant phenotypes, pathological independent continuance like tumors, and pathological processes such as oncogenesis. The specificity of the ontology in terms of what kind of organism it is we're talking about and the stages in that are important too. So the FMA is specifically human adult canonical anatomy. Zebrafish anatomy is originally purely for zebrafish itself, but it's now kind of like growing to become an anatomy that takes account of all other kind of like fish within this order family. And this new ontology called CARO, the Common Anatomy Reference Ontology, which is going to be a multi-species, or at least kind of like metazoan level ontology, that covers organisms at all different stages of their existence. Also, the Go Biological Process Ontology covers all organisms at all different stages. So the Foundry strives to be orthogonal. If there's two ontologies that want to share the same, so one ontology can occupy multiple kind of like slots in this. So for the Go biological process ontology occupies multiple levels of granularity. But if you have two ontologies that want to share the same slot, then they have to come to some agreement with each other as to either like divide up that slot in some way or agree to who, you know, to have their ontologies aligned and in common across those.
Chris, could I ask a question?
Sure.
So how is this consistent with having species-specific ontologies like the anatomy ontology?
Well, having species-specific anatomy ontologies is, that's one of the reasons why species specificity is one of the kind of like partitions, because it's okay to have two separate ontologies share the same slot if they're covering different species. Ideally, we should eventually move towards,
a single.
But that it turns out to be incredibly difficult. So it's just a kind of necessary way of dividing it up. And the methodology we have with CARO is just starting to fill up the upper levels, and it's trying to define things like organ and cell and these other species-specific anatomical ontologies. Insofar as they overlap, should conform to CARO. So that's one case where there's a slight overlap in the kind of like the slots in the Foundry, and how that gets resolved. So this is an older slide showing a similar thing. We talked a little bit about definitions previously, and definitions are definitely one of the criteria for membership of the Oboe Foundry. In particular, we really strive for well-formed definitions that provide both necessary and sufficient conditions. And ideally, these should be kind of like Aristotelian definitions or genus differentia, definitions of the form of an S is a genus which has some discriminating characteristics. And there should be a single such definition. And this is, I think, this ties in with some of the discussion about single is a hierarchy yesterday. Because I think really that discussion's about, you know, should we have Aristotelian definitions or not? Because when you have these, this essentially gives you your primary is apparent. And from the definition itself, if it's in computable form, you can automatically construct the full subsumption DAG that will allow you to answer the kind of like the queries that you want.
Question
yeah.
For this. For instance, in FMA, it's very frequently stated that there are Aristotelian definitions, but that Aristotelian definitions are exclusively in free text and not
exactly.
Theoretically.
Yeah.
And I don't know any of the OBO ontologies which have already necessary
in computable form. There's only one so far. The sequence ontology has a few hundred, actually. In computable form. The gene ontology will have these soon, and some of the other ontologies will follow with that soon as well.
But this would require a more sophisticated representational formats, which probably cannot be longer accommodated by that-headed style.
Now, if you look at the OBO format specification for OBO format 1.2, you can express these, and it's essentially LDL semantics, or a subset of that.
Which DL?
It's not actually in. I mean, it's in its own kind of like syntax that can be converted to LDL such that you can use LDL.
EL.
Sorry.
To EL.
DL.
Yes, but DL has different dialect.
There. We can discuss more of that afterwards. There's definitely, you know, that's a kind of ongoing effort. Yes?
Mm-hmm. So when you say that you have definition, do you have a single definition or just like a defined sentence?
Well, so that's what we're discussing. I mean, I think the important thing for getting the ontology right is to just have the definition in some kind of like text form, but in order to be able to do the reasoning on it and to do this kind of thing where you derive the full DAG, then you need the definition in a computable form.
That means that if you go back to your definition, that F is a G with D.
Yeah.
But F,
D
is
a,
it's already defined.
G is already.
But how about D?
D, yes. D, typically, in this case, forms essentially like it's a relationship to another entity. So that's what the discriminating characteristic is.
And the other entity will be dealt with, ideally, in another OBO Foundry ontology.
Or this, in this case, the same one, but yeah. In other. Yeah. So, yeah. So we'll get to the relationships in probably a couple of slides. Yeah.
How strong is the constraint on not having recursion? I'm not speaking of cycles, recursion.
There should be no cycles in the definition.
Pathogen. Yet. How do you define pathogen? It's an organism that attacks other organisms. Here you have this is perhaps not the best example I would like to have here, but in biology it's more difficult to define.
Okay, I think we can do that. I can do that one, but is should we discuss this just now or?
No, I think we've got about 15 minutes.
Okay.
I think. And
so one of the crucial things about the Foundry is the ontologies, and it should be interconnected, because the reason, you know, as Susie said, you know, this, the Foundry started as a kind of like offshoot of Go, because we wanted to do more reasoning kind of like beyond the Go. We wanted to integrate the other kinds of data, like phenotype data that we had in our model database databases, And one of the goals is ultimately to relate that to disease. So we want some way of doing the kind of like inferencing to cross from genes to genotypes to phenotypes to diseases. So the entities represented in the Foundry ontologies are connected by relations defined in the overall relations ontology. And these relations sometimes connect different kinds of entities, and they are also, some of them are also capable of connecting across different granular layers. And some of those connections can just be in the form of like normal DAG relationships, which represent necessary conditions, or they can actually be in the form of definitions, give you both necessary and sufficient conditions. So to give an example of this from Go biological process, processes can have continuance as participants. So for example, some of these terms from Go, like cysteine biosynthesis, oocyte differentiation, neural crest cell migration, can be defined in terms of more primitive Go processes, which would be the genus term, and terms defined in other ontologies, such as the Kebbi chemical ontology or the oval cell ontology. So another area where we want this kind of like connectivity between the ontologies is in representing phenotypes. And this is one of the primary use cases in a lot of the stuff many of us in this room are working on now as part of the National Center for Biomedical Ontologies. And we essentially want to kind of like link genes to phenotypes and diseases. And so the idea here is that phenotypes are categorized as kinds of dependent continuants, which is to say they need some kind of independent continuant as a bearer of them. So the phenotype is really a quality inhering in a bearer. And additionally, phenotypes can be directed towards other entities. We'll see what that means in the next slide. And this this whole idea is what we call the kind of the Pareto EQ methodology, which is proving successful for model organism database annotation.
Chris, what is your view? What is your view of how the computers will help you to understand the relationship between
Okay, so the most immediate use cases are really low-hanging fruit, and it's really just things such as if you have like orthologous genes in two species, and you have a whole collection of data about that, and you're describing them using these kind of EQ phenotype annotations, you can explore hypotheses about how these genes are related or how phenotypes are related. So this is one of the use cases for the NCBO, some of the driving biological projects. So it was Michael Ashburner and Monty kind of like working on this. So, and then this is the kind of slide we saw, I think yesterday, where we saw the genes and their gene products relating to their phenotypes and kind of going across that way.
Describe again what you meant by EQ methodology.
Okay, so it's not necessarily very well named, but Q is the quality or the actual kind of the core. So quality are things like kind of shapes and sizes and that kind of thing. And the E is the entity or the bearer entity in which that inheres. So you can see that in this example here. So here's some phenotype descriptions, and I've taken these ones from the mammalian phenotype ontology and showed computable definitions of these in terms of other oval ontologies. So starting with the kind of the low-hanging fruit, the kind of trivial ones, the big ears phenotype can be described using the Pareto quality, largeness or large size, and the bearer of that quality is an ear, or in this case, in the mouse anatomy, it's defined in the plural as ears. We've got other phenotypes, such as sensitivity to nicotine. And again, Pareto just has the kind of the core building block qualities themselves. And this is a different kind of relation between an actual kind of like type of entity. So in this case, where you have this phenotype, it's sensitivity towards a certain type of entity. So we can see here we're linking different oval ontologies. And these could be anatomical ontologies or the gene ontology. and in this case, chemical types, also environment type ontologies. And going kind of like further down the line, we've got some more kind of like interesting ones where the phenotypes start to kind of cross the line in terms of what are occasionally classified in disease ontologies as well.
Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean that big ears is large size of ears?
Yeah. Okay. So there's
ears that are large.
You can turn it around, and it really depends on whether you're describing kind of like phenotypes or the actual kind of continuums that arise out of that phenotype. I think it's more useful to do it this way because when you have phenotypes such as sensitivity to nicotine, it's useful to use the quality itself as the base for that.
I'd just like to point out this is a conundrum that we've faced frequently, and there seem to be at least three different approaches to it.
Mm-hmm.
One is to say, oh, it's the quality.
Yeah.
Another one is to say, no, it's the location or morphology. Mm-hmm. And a third approach, which we've taken, is to say that we, to get the semantics that we want, we don't make either decision. Anyway, that may be maybe a sidelight, but you know, it's this whole issue of is a lung carcinoma a carcinoma located in the lung, or is it a lung which has transformed mm-hmm. into a carcinomatous lung?
I think there are two different entities that are obviously like highly reciprocally related, but I think you have to be sure of which one you're representing when you attach this data to it.
So sidelight.
Mm-hmm.
Diversion, sorry.
Yeah.
It is key though, as far as this is something I wish we had more time. Maybe
I'm very surprised by this way of presenting it, because I think there's a huge difference between what you do if you describe a phenotype and what you and creating combination of classes. What you just described is as if an EQ statement, which is basically a statement, would be nothing else but just combining different classes from different ontologies. But in the EQ statements, which we have considered in the phenotype workshop in the last one in the UK, were much more complex, and they were basically statements. There were statements like, there is something in the world which has has large ears and is sensitive to nicotine. You know, it would be.
I think that may be just an artifact of this particular.
Okay.
Slide.
So you didn't change any.
No, the semantics.
Because this way the way you present it, it's not like you're making statements, but you're just creating classes.
It's equivalent. You can make statements to the pre-coordinated classes, provided they are defined in terms of the simpler elements using the correct definitional methodology. Or you can make the statements just using the actual elemental
by just creating
themselves.
The class of horses with horns on their forehead.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't say already that there are unicorns. There's a difference between creating classes and saying that there is something that fulfills that is it.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that's this has not the assertive force. That's not
even okay. I don't think that's a concern, but I'll take that. See.
Okay.
So right now the Ogle Foundry is a kind of a disease-shaped hole, or kind of several disease-shaped holes, which is why, you know, Greg started out with the disease ontology whenever it was. And so when I did these slides, you know, I was just kind of like thinking in terms of technically with respect to the Ogle Foundry, how do we proceed going about to fill those holes? I wasn't aware at the time of kind of like developments with SNOMED that it, you know, maybe moving towards an open source model, and I definitely think we should dedicate some time to discussing that and what exactly that means. But whichever ontology it is that kind of ends up filling this hole, I think, you know, we need to answer some kind of like questions, like what are the scope of that, and which slots in the Obo Foundry does it fill, and how do these entities connect with other entities defined in the Obo Foundry ontologies, perhaps using a kind of similar methodology we've seen with phenotypes. Also, how do we, whereabouts does it fit in terms of like levels of granularity? And something we haven't really mentioned much at all is...
I have a question.
Yeah?
That's count.
Oh, that's count. Okay. Yeah. So, how, you know, obviously a lot of people, when you're using something like SNOMED at the moment, you're using it in a clinical setting and not in a veterinary setting or something like that. You don't really
Actually,
care.
Actually, they are using it in veterinary.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
In fact, SNOMED was developed by a veterinarian on the editorial board from 1975 through 93.
So it represents animal diseases?
Yes.
It is, okay, I didn't know.
It's widely used by veterinary medicine.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
See ya.
Hi, John.
Okay, so diseases are dependent continuants, and we've got space for those in the Obo Foundry, and we've also got these kind of like holes in the Obo Foundry for the actual pathological independent continuants themselves, such as tumors. What we're not sure about is, you know, there is the NCBI taxonomy, which covers the different kinds of viruses, but I don't know, I've heard various things as to whether how adequate that is for an actual virologist, bearing in mind that, you know, like Kent said in the first aid, we want to distinguish between the virus itself and the virus infection event and the actual condition of having that virus. There's no pathological processes like oncogenesis in the Obo Foundry at the moment, but bear in mind that the gene ontology, whilst being an ontology of canonical processes, it does have processes such as viral infection, because they are entirely canonical from the perspective of the virus. So what should the relationship between whatever disease ontology we have be, and these other ontologies, should they import them from another source, or should they be managed? And also the relationship between kind of like diseases and phenotypes. And so I think a lot of these came from a Kent slide on the first day. So once we've decided what the entities we want to represent are, what are the other entities that we're going to kind of like connect to? You know, like for example, between the disease cancer and the actual independent continuant of the carcinoma, and between all these other things such as disease and dispositions, genes and diseases. Now, I think a lot of these will be out of scope for the Obo Foundry as well. Some of these, I think, maybe should go in knowledge bases or application ontologies, for example. Databases like linking with knowledge about relationship between specific genes and cancer and so on. But one crucial thing is we need to add the appropriate relations to the Obo relations ontology in order to support these. Okay, so... Okay, I'll just speak. We've already kind of like discussed that briefly. Another thing we've already discussed a bit already is providing these kinds of definitions. And I think for some ontologies, it's actually not too onerous or not too hard to provide these kinds of Aristotelian definitions. It seems proved to be a lot harder to do that for diseases. But there's at least a lot of work we can kind of like. Build on there, and then there's this recurring question whether there should be a single axis of classification in the disease ontology. And it seems we're kind of like, we keep on going around and saying, yeah, this is hard, we can't do this, but I think it would be a good idea to maybe just have a list of kind of like challenging cases and put them up on the wiki and just, like we did for the definition of disease itself, but this time actually focusing in specific diseases. So I think this is essentially what Fabian was saying this morning. And okay, so this is hard, but we should just go for the low-hanging fruit. And for those kind of like ones where we can at least partially define in terms of functions or functionings, we can actually start defining these in terms of like the gene ontologies, but being as granular as specific as possible. And a lot of the time, we just don't know the underlying pathways and networks and so on, but we can at least just go to the level of specificity that we know. And, you know, when we're happy with them, we could tag them with, you know, this part of the disease ontology is candidate for the OBO foundry. And then for all the other terms, we just essentially provide links to the other associated kinds of entities. And then these can be used to essentially automatically build the DAG, so you can have your kind of like, you can do your anatomy-specific queries, such as, you know, find me all diseases of the organ and use the FMA to automatically do the query. So, okay, that's it. Alan?
You talked about connecting things together.
Yeah.
Connecting owl ontologies, whether you refer to them or importing them in various forms, a notoriously tricky task at the moment. People are just beginning to get their heads around it. What have you actually done? Sorry, are you actually working with the owl community at all on this, or are you working with using your own techniques? Because it turns out there are a lot more issues that are obvious.
So are the difficult issues you refer to essentially to do technological ones?
There are. With owl, there are three. There's one which is completely generic, which is that as soon as you have multiple ontologies, then you need to link them according to IDs rather than according to names.
Yeah.
And the names have to cease to be the primary.
Oh, and that's one of the criteria.
I presume that's one that's since been dealt with. Mm-hmm. Then in owl, there's a serious confusion between the use of URIs as locations and the use of URIs as OIDs.
Mm-hmm.
And the question of what's the issue of what's the base URI for this ontology, where is it located, what are the URIs on the entities in this ontology? There are a whole series of questions like that, which, though they're made worse by some of OWL, actually the issue which is behind them, which is whether when you refer to something in another ontology, how much of the other ontology do you bring in? Does that mean you actually have to import the whole ontology? Do you just refer to an item in the other ontology? Do you refer to an item and just bring in its parents so you can connect it up to the top and know what it is?
Right now we're just going with the simplest possible solution, and yeah, you import it in when you at least want to do the reasoning.
What do you import in?
The entire ontology.
The entire ontology.
So I'm not so sure that is going to be a stable route in the long run. So when we try to understand the relationship between Caro and the model and the organism-specific anatomies, the original idea was that we just have Caro at the top and then all the mouse anatomical entities, fish anatomical entities would be dangling beneath. And that immediately gives you something which looks like the worst possible world of multiple inheritance. It's not just multiple inheritance, it's multiple inheritance gone wild. And so my suspicion is that we're going to have to rely on what will, for a while, until these sorts of problems are solved, look very much like social engineering. What that will mean is that we have Caro, for instance, which is supposed to be telling us the structure of the anatomical ontologies. It's part of the OBO foundry, and then the mouse people have to build their ontology so that its top level just looks like Caro, but with mouse everywhere, and similarly for human and for fly and so forth. And that means that Caro will be there, and all the mouse and fish anatomies will be there, and they will be linked in the fact that they share the same top levels. Those top levels will live in different places. It's an ugly way of doing it, but it's a safe way of doing it until we work out how to do it.
I mean, I think there's quite a bit of work going on you might want to look at in this area. I mean, I think this is one area where you're plowing your own furrow where there's a lot of activity going on. And I think you might do well to pay attention to some of it. That it also, I think, if you do that, you're potentially missing the ability to abduct up the multiple ontologies, which is potentially one of the interesting possibilities. Nobody's ever done it yet, but it's one of the really interesting possibilities if you get multiple organism ontologies, being able to say, and look at what is actually common amongst what people have said about this particular aspect of this particular, say, anatomical structure in this particular organism. Can we move some of that up and thereby reduce, or either reduce or take useful advantage of this multiple inheritance? And I'm not sure, I know Barry's terribly concerned about that multiple inheritance, but I'm not actually convinced that it does you any great damage. You do get a DAG with things that have multiple parents if you do that. Whether it's actually a problem or whether the best thing would be actually to address that in the tool and to filter out some of those things visually, but still keep them there in terms of constraints.
Absolutely, yeah.
So that you actually, if you're not using the ontologies actually for their logical content and constraints, then it doesn't matter. But then why do you have a common ontology? If you do, then cutting them off sacrifices that, and what are you doing? And I would have thought that it would be worth trying to look at the various strategies that people are using for that. It's not an easy problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'd like to move that one. Go ahead and move just because.
It's your doohickeys.
So prior to the meeting, Susie played a trick on me in that she had me wander into this place, and I'm without a doubt kind of over my head. Let's see if I can get this guy. So I have this image, which is the following, that we're in New York City and I'm a cab driver and I've just picked up Susie. And I said, so where are you going? And she says, well, enlightenment. And I said, well, where's that? And we happen to be right in front of a Zen monastery in New York City. And she says, go in there and ask them where enlightenment is. And that's where I feel like here. You guys are up here, Buddha and the Dalai Lama, and I'm a cab driver down here. I'm not an ontology guy. And as evidence of this, I've been recording quotes from this whole meeting, and all of these comments are a complete mystery to me. I heard a question: is evolution a disease? This is very worrisome to me. Rex said, "My ruthlessness will be gentle." I could sort of get behind that. I like what's normal for a coon cat is irrelevant for a human. So I've got many other quotes that I've recorded, and we could put them up somewhere. And I have to comment on this one. This is, again, I have this, I'm a cab driver down here, and you guys are way up here. And I heard this, it's a red herring to talk about mutants. Now, this is ridiculous, because this is a wild type, okay? So obviously, a red herring is a mutant, okay, if I understand this at all. Okay, so I'm trying as best as this little cab driver can, walking among giants, okay? Now, what's the problem with a cab driver walking around in a Zen garden? He uses language, he abuses the language, so just forgive me, I will not do that. They tend to be quite crude, which also means they're very annoying, okay? And that's going to be me. I have a weak grasp of the obvious, and you're going to see that through here. And even if I'm right, I'm so down here, you're probably not going to care if there are times when I say something. And now a cab driver often will tell people what to do, and I will say, among all these lists, I am not going to tell anyone what to do. I will be very working class right up to the last point. We're going to talk about if we can use SNOMED as our set of ontology that we may build on, and I will suggest action items, but that's all I'm going to do. Do we think that we might be able to adopt SNOMED for our disease ontology? We think so, but there's many unresolved issues. Licensing and the meaning of licensing and also policy are not necessarily the same thing. So there are some licensing and openness issues that we're going to have to talk about. Another issue is that in order for this to do this, we have to talk to the standards SDO.
The Standard Development Organization.
We should make an appeal to them that maybe this would be a good idea. There will be usage issues. There will be support issues. There will be future-proofing issues. So,
what's future-proofing?
We'll talk about that. It's just, it doesn't make sense to use SNOMED. Is there universal agreement that this is a good starting point and to move forward? And I certainly hope that that's true. So we have some licensing openness issues, and I talk about this in greater detail in some subsequent slides. But what I have a suggestion. Some of the issues will. I don't get a laser pointer. Is that set? Absolutely gone. Okay. What happened to the other doohickeys that were using?
I think I have one.
Okay. My question is, with regards to licensing, I'm a manager, I've got people that could start developing on the disease ontology, and I just want to know that whatever developments we engage in, whatever kind of incorporation, whatever work that we do, are we sure that it will be incorporated back into the system, and will it remain available? We also have to get into some issues of version control handling, and we need to talk about what these general administrative principles are. And we need to, I would suggest, that we should get together as a group. There's some users here that are sort of chomping at the bit, and I think that we should describe in greater detail what our requirements are, and then hand them off to you, perhaps, and you can tell us if all these specs have been met. And we have some points that we could talk about. We went over at lunch, and I can bring up right now. But I would imagine, I humbly, cab driver, would suggest that we probably have some type of face-to-face discussion in the future.
I would implore you not to do something and then throw it over the wall.
Right.
Let's engage. And, mm-hmm. One of the things that I've observed at this meeting is that we are fairly monotypic at this meeting. Mm-hmm. In other words, there aren't a lot of clinicians. That is natural. But clinicians, I think, and developers of clinical terminology are essential to the development of the disease ontology. Right. And so my appeal would be to engage rather than throw something over the wall.
Fair enough.
If you understand what I mean by that.
Well, I think one of the things, you imagine it's going to be an active dialogue, not just kind of put it on a postcard or write up the requirements, slip them under the door, and wait for you to meet the requirements.
But surely scientific publishing is writing requirements and slipping them under the door. And scientific publishing is a good thing.
I'm not saying exclusively engage, but I'm saying don't exclusively publish and submit.
I would say actually what we wanted, our concern was more of the opposite, that you guys would want to be very hands off, and I was actually hoping that it was like you could sit down at a table and talk it over, because I think it would really hurt, or at least my use case is, which is mm-hmm. the translational stuff, if
the clinicians were doing one thing to describe diseases and the biologists were doing something different, that would be a disaster, I think. And so it's very good to hear that they want to engage.
Well, it's
great.
I think we need to acknowledge that in order for research to be appropriately translated, you have to bridge a bit of a gulf of terminology. And as long as we recognize that it's there, it's not just culturally that this meeting consists primarily of basic scientists. And if you're in medical school, you understand the gulf between the basic and clinical science departments. I don't want to overlay that particular conflict on this, but when you're talking specifically about disease ontology, I do still want to differentiate the ontology from the terminology.
Right.
But I think that's a point for discussion on what are the requirements. What are we, what in general needs to be built, and how do you want to go about doing that?
Right.
But it's just, let's engage with the people who have real clinical uses, as well as the people who have real research uses.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Okay.
So I have some other sort of, I would call them administrative issues. What I was referring to in the previous slide, really, there's some issues I think we're all wondering about with respect to licensing and maybe what would be the fate of the intellectual work that gets rolled into the system. That's one issue. Another issue that I think a lot of people are aware of, at least from my experience of watching what happens with Go, is what I'll call administrative issues. So when contributors want to make updates to the terms themselves, is there some degree of responsiveness that we're familiar to? We have the experience with Go of being able to submit a mail message to Midori and getting a nearly instantaneous response. And so one way to think of this also is sort of what is the editorial control of the development of the ontology itself? Is there a grand poobah at the top, or is there an editorial team, or can all of us, can many different researchers contribute to development? And I think that we're really open to whatever the model is, but that's just some questions that we have. And supposing that there were problems or that development process was different than the type of responsiveness that we're used to, just what's going on behind the scenes would be, it'd just be nice to explore and understand what's happening there. I have a question, which is, I've got lots of people that I think would be prepared to contribute, and are there any kind of training components for how they could do that? So these are issues. And also, I heard in an offline discussion that there was a ranking of who gets priority in terms of the development, and researchers were kind of bottom of the totem pole from what I was hearing. And I think that there's just other questions that we have about what the prioritization would be.
Structurally, in the old model, mm-hmm. that happened.
Yeah.
My own view is that the direction the new SDO needs to go mm-hmm. is in the direction of what's called commons-based peer production.
Right.
Where prioritization takes place as a result of energy and contribution, not entirely by the model of production that a firm would take, where right. they say, here's the list of things that need to be done, here's our list of resources, we match up the things that need to be done with the resources, and we tell people to do things,
mm-hmm.
right? That's the model that those who've been managing SNOMED operate on, and they're unfamiliar with commons-based peer production, which is the way Go is being built. And my view is that we need to go in that direction. So that would place the prioritization on the mm-hmm. backs of those who want to bring resources to do the work.
Right. So I think one of the things that you're saying is that you favor, but one advantage to exploring what we're talking about is that it would probably start driving SNOMED in a direction at an administrative level that you want to see. Okay.
Yeah.
So we'd really like to help with that. another administrative issue is what happens with just the general versioning of the system. Susie kept on describing this as, you know, is ontology management could be also thought of as this, you have the same versioning problems that go on with software. And are there these types of control points that we could look to? And from the offline discussion we had, it sounded like they were pretty sophisticated, actually, in terms of how you dealt with versioning. And we can ask you right now, we could engage in discussion, but I think some issues that have to be addressed are, is it something where we could possibly be operating on the ontology at an individual term level, or would it be something that be more like a batch processing activity where a set of contributors could be collecting a whole bunch of updates over here and pushing them in at once? And back at my shop, we often complain about the obsolescence issue that goes on with gene ontologies, where when there's retirement of terms, it's not always obvious what the new term is supposed to be, and you can't have automated software that handles that process. So, and also, if, for example, we were to kind of check out a node or a portion of a list, is there a straightforward mechanism that if somehow that list got stale for forward mapping into the new development trunk, and those issues are out there. And just to pursue this a little bit further, I'll skip that for now. Do you want to comment on versioning at this point? Or?
All I will say is that currently there is a 6-month release cycle that we are hoping to be able to change. That will definitely not change for at least 18 months, I would say, because of the tooling changeover necessary. But Keith Campbell and myself both are very much preparing for it to move in that direction. And Keith, for those of you who don't know Keith, he's an MD, PhD from Stanford in computer science. His PhD dissertation was about concurrency control in terminology development. And he developed the tool set by which SNOMED RT was developed. And I would agree with Alan's earlier comment that I think we do a fairly good job of this stuff today.
Now, there's a job that I think that we have to do, which is to appeal to the new SNOMED organizational body. And I will, I have this image of when there were some discussions about open access that were going on at NIH. I have this one image of that at a certain stage they were taking in weepy mothers into Congress, and they would say, you know, my child has this disease and there's all this government research that's going on and I can't get access to that information. And that was some of the drivers that were involved in open access. And I wonder if, is this another situation where we want to be pushing things to the level of, or sort of invoking those types of issues. I think that it's very important that if we do make this appeal, that we need to talk about it in the context of what value can we actually add to the system. And I think that there are some people that I know of that could be contributing, that could be adding tremendous scholarship to the development of the whole system. And I hope that there could be an appreciation for that. And so I'll just throw out there that there are some issues about where we're going to go to how we're going to approach appealing. And I have no idea if it has to be multiple parties. This cab driver doesn't know how tactful we have to be about that. Can there be a number of different people that are sort of sending emails and advocating, or just exactly how we should handle that? I'm not the right guy for the job. And when we're talking about it offline, this is the right time to throw this in, was that there was a concept of, you know, is this a good time to be sort of forming a society of disease ontology development? And I think that there would be a number of different benefits to that in terms of the value proposition also as well. It increases the notoriety and the number of people that are involved establishes perhaps a new level of scholarship or an exciting component of scholarship that could be brought in with this. And I'll just throw those out as ideas, things that action items that ultimately I think need to be addressed.
Could you just to fill me in a little bit, say something mm-hmm. about you and your work? So where does your enthusiasm come from?
Right. So for the most part, what we do is make relatively flat, controlled vocabularies for the purpose of defining infectious disease. And we think of it as a product of working with several different controlled vocabularies. For example, pathogen is basically described by the NCBI taxonomy. And when we want to be able to describe infection systems, we treat it as another control vocabulary that you have to have is the host that may be human or animal, and we have developed a control vocabulary for transmission method, and we're using an existing one for disease for anatomy, and we need disease, and this is where Lynn has been doing most of her work, and the purpose of this is mostly for describing category A through C infectious agents and linking that type of information. Here I've got Clostridium, and it may have a few different hosts, and there may be a few different transmission methods. And for example, linking these types of rows of data to DNA signature development. So I might want to ask the question, what are all the infectious agents that impact cow? And to pull down that list and then produce DNA signatures for them, and that type of thing. And we view this as just being a relatively rudimentary system that once you have these infection systems identified, you could link them to the incidence of something happening in a clinic, and that may be used for tracking bird flu, for example. And we can put, you know, pinpricks on Google Maps and make this type of data available to people. And I threw this picture in here. I was really caught up by the image of lacerations, and I just wanted to point out that we're not interested in any type of bodily injury. Our disease node is mostly infectious agents. So that's my thing. So I have questions also, I think that we have to address when we have a meeting or something, different issues having to do with usage. So I've heard, again, this is the taxi driver mauling your language, that there might be an issue when you're developing a disease ontology of separating findings versus signs, or findings versus diseases, I don't know. The issue is that there are what I consider to be usage and administrative policies that you use in order to drive development of your ontology. And I assume you have best practices developed in this area. And I assume that we have to find out if your best practices are consistent with the way that other people would like to do this. And I'm just saying that this is an issue. We have to get together and have discussions of this kind. Are there meetings now that are going on, or would we want to generate new meetings that would go on that would go into issues about usage? As another more rubber hits the road kind of usage issue, I would say that we could start taking SNOMED for a test drive. I've got people in my shop right now that could start looking at different aspects of it and seeing if it's useful. I would suggest humbly that perhaps we should think about taking it right now, operating on the assumption that there are no licensing problems, taking it right now and converting it over to some description that might be more compatible with allowing us to evaluate it with the existing tools that the NCBO has.
Just a question on that. The U.S. license does permit you to do that.
Right, right.
You're entirely free and clear to do that.
Right.
The only time
right.
you might run into trouble is if you try to take it and transport it outside the country
right.
and then implement it in clinical information systems. But
I got it.
That's not what you're proposing. So
right.
You're entirely free to, especially if you're just looking at it,
right.
You're entirely free to do that.
Right. So I mean,
and what about posting results on a website? Yeah.
So they have their pathogens described this way.
There are lots of people who have done that, and they have not got in trouble. I
don't. In other words, it's all a matter of time.
That's less than comforting.
I'll close the radar.
The point is, the NLM negotiated the license with the CAP with the understanding that it would make it available for all these uses. Then people have read the license and backed off, which distressed me because I wasn't involved in the negotiations, and I think they botched it as a result of that. The new SDO is likely to be even more open than the CAP has been in the last 5 years. And so, it is something that should be explicitly addressed.
Right. So, for example, if we were to do some tests now, we actually have a license for a separate license, not just under the UML license, but a separate license. So if we were to do a test run and wanted to post it for members of this group to see, is that something that's likely to be frowned on, or should we have to send out a password to everybody at close site?
I guess if you posted the entire terminology, all 370,000.
No, we would not do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if it's a limited set, there are lots of people who put SNOMED browsers. I mean, there are at least three SNOMED browsers that have the entire terminology available on the web. NCI has one. The veterinarians have one. Who else has one? Anyway, there's at least three or four of those out there already. Mm-hmm. Again, I can't speak for either the CAP or for the new organization. I'm just telling you what has happened.
Well, NCI has more money than I do, so they were going to put it in first.
But it sounds like if we were to explore this, you're suggesting that we just address these issues explicitly, and it sounds like if the NCBO, for example, is able to say these are the types of activities that we're able to perform on it, all of a sudden your kind of market share of potential users goes way up. So that would be it could be the driver for clarification of exactly how open and available all this is. Yes, sir.
I think this actually does bring us back, because you're talking about looking at evaluating something that comes back to the requirements again.
Yes.
We've heard amazingly little about requirements, and this is the thing I expected most of this meeting to be about.
But I just described what we needed for.
Well, within at a very high level. I think being able to say that to start on the exploration with some tasks and being able to say whether you were able to achieve them or were not able to achieve them,
right.
Without any prejudgment of what that has, whether it's with SNOMED or whether it's with NCI or whether it's with anything else, is actually very important methodologically. I don't think it makes sense, or indeed with any of the OVO tools.
Right.
The thing that I don't see in the OVO Foundry is, again, methodology, is the checking against the set of requirements to see that we would have any idea of whether it actually has succeeded or not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been a dreadful problem with oncology development right across the board.
Fair enough.
And yeah, so we are, in fact, desperately trying to create liaisons with people who are going to help us test it. We're making headway on several fronts in that regard. You can't test something until you build it. That means you have to take certain risks. And if you hesitate to build something because you're not quite sure whether building it this way or that way is going to serve its purpose, then you'll never ever build it.
I accept that entirely, having made a great deal of my career by forging ahead where others refused to. So, on the other hand, that knowing having some idea of what your criteria are, even on small scales, and when it comes to design decisions, again, the other thing I haven't seen here is anything that actually discusses the alternatives for various designs and what the consequences are and what evidence might be used.
Yeah, so we discuss all of that. We, at the moment, as you know better than I, we are living in an age where the appropriate idiom for expressing ontologies in computational way is not clear. Owl is in a rapid state of evolution. There are problems with owl which may or may not be solved. Other idioms have advantages over owl and disadvantages relative to owl. Therefore, the Oboe Foundry has taken the decision that until the dust settles, we will allow people to be a part of the Foundry initiative, provided they embrace one or other of the alternative ontological idioms. In order that we have development work going on, we can test out some of the issues at the borders between the ontologies without committing ourselves to just one.
I don't believe I mentioned the word owl. The sorts of decisions that I was concerned about were the ontological decisions, not the decision between the tools are relatively minor. And if we once decide what it is that people want to do, what the requirements are, then the answers to what tools fulfill those or don't are relatively straightforward. The answers to whether various things do or do not represent the things you want to need a clear, and what the consequences are.
And we have published dozens of papers addressing precisely those issues, which you also well know, which have been discussed over and over again at meetings all over the world by very intelligent people. And the proposals in those papers.
No, I have seen papers asserting solutions. I have never seen from this group a paper presenting alternatives. Ever. That's simply true. If you can point me at one, I'll be delighted to retract it, but I have never seen an alternatives paper. And as a software developer, this strikes me as very odd.
So the group is very large and amorphous, and it reflects people who've been doing this work for many years, and they've been doing it in different ways. The goal of the Oboe Foundry is to try and find a way in which the results of all of that work can be brought together in order to create the conditions for interoperability between ontologies developed by those different groups. There are various alternative such approaches with various alternative upper level ontologies. For instance, we have studied some of those alternative approaches and we've written reports about studies. We've studied the NCIT approach, for instance. We've made studies of dozens of alternatives. In fact, when I think about it, we've not put them all together in one study of all of the alternatives, but we have done a lot of work along those lines. So I think that you are. Yes, Ben?
Well, I just want to add, I mean, the only thing that we thus far did not do is put those things into software. But our main claim is just that before starting to program in the wild, you should think carefully about what you want to program. I hope you can't reproach, is that a word?
Yes.
As for that.
I was surprised in a meeting like this, where there are a number of issues about how people do people, and at other meetings that I would go to, there would often be two or three alternatives presented, and the consequences of those various decisions would be discussed. And usually that actually results in a much clearer understanding of how a particular decision is taken.
It is good to see the alternatives that come forward.
I've been tasked with getting Susie to enlightenment,
I'm going to move
us forward. Question I have with regards to the test drive, and also I think it just says things about possible models about how people could be contributing to the system.
This is a SNOMED.
Yes, this is with respect to using SNOMED. This was sort of Rex and I having a discussion at lunch. Is SNOMED sufficiently mature that we never have to add any terms?
That's easy to answer.
Yeah,
it's 80% complete.
Right.
Almost always.
We like that number.
these are wild extremes. So that's out. Okay. If my annotator was working on it, would it be possible for that annotator to essentially check out a node and perform lots of modifications on that node, and then it'd be able to expect that we could reintegrate that entire node back into the system? Just exactly how would that work? And
the
yes.
check out there, suppose a particular software engineering methodology, which I'll check in, check out, which most people have abandoned.
Yes.
Many people have, in large projects have abandoned.
Yeah.
And again, referring to Keith's work,
right.
He talks about semantics-based concurrency control. Mm-hmm. It's not entirely clear that you can't have some of both. Mm-hmm. Just sort of as a sidelight, the whole idea from day one of the development of SnowmedRT 10 years ago was that you would have multiple people able to take portions of the terminology, edit an entire path, and then bring it back for the merge process. And this
right.
merge process is actually where the action takes place.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. So it sounds like something like this scenario would happen, and our other question would be, do you make toy terms sitting outside and wait until you can convert your toy terms back to?
The other thing that, again, I want to emphasize, I see there being a tight coupling between some of the content of SNOMED and what you want in the formal ontology of diseases. But they may not be one and the same.
Right.
And in fact, I think they're going to be, I think for sure there will be things in a clinical terminology of disease, and also potentially things in a terminology of disease for research annotation.
Right.
Which is, I mean, this is sort of the level of description that I think Alan was getting at. Mm-hmm. What are the requirements of the users? And we have the things that we're talking about, a formal ontology of disease, clinical terminology for clinical purposes, containing codes that represent diseases and other things as well, and potentially also a need for terminology of annotating research reports with disease entities that may not in fact be one and the same with the formal ontology. Those are the kinds of questions that I think we ought to look at very carefully. And my own view on that whole question is that you want to keep your formal ontology tightly linked with but separate from your terminology.
Okay, fair enough.
So the vision I have arising out of this meeting is that we should try and develop the disease ontology within the OBO Foundry in such a way that it's compatible with the relevant disease terms in SNOMED. If possible, identical with
closely
a subset,
aligned, absolutely.
Subset of SNOMED. And the terms which are introduced for clinical recording purposes, pharyngitis without mention of a boating accident, for instance.
Without loss of consciousness. You would say head injury without loss of consciousness does not belong in the disease ontology. And most clinicians would say that code is very important for reporting people who have
head injury. Loss of consciousness is important, and head injury is important.
No, but head injury without loss of consciousness, if it's not a code in the disease ontology, it definitely has to be in the clinical terminology.
Yes, so if we go by the principle of low-hanging fruit, we can create a disease ontology by taking the subset of clear cases within SNOMED and seeing how to organize them in a formal way which is compatible with the OBO Foundry, and which we could then test to see whether it gives reasoning capacities, for instance, that SNOMED itself, for whatever reason, does not have. And we can use each of them as a benchmark for the other.
That's definitely worth doing.
And in many ways, the disease ontology that we've developed is precisely that. Apart from flaws that are in it, of which there are many, and if there's agreement that we could go this route, then we would switch over completely to using SNOMED terms so that they're directly alignable.
Yeah.
And I think that would be terrific.
Aligned.
But then would it be similar to scenario two up there, that as you're going on, I mean, if you were to add extensions?
Well, I think that's part of the unknown at this point.
Okay.
I think what we want to look at is how the organization, as it is in the context of SNOMED, which is, has all these other multiple uses, which are all great uses, works in terms of the kinds of questions that the researchers who would use it want to ask. And maybe it's 100%. We literally just take a branch and use it. Or maybe we just use the terms and put them in a slightly different set of relationships.
Yeah, that's all design work.
Yeah.
That's not something you can decide in advance, and it should evolve appropriately.
It requires use cases, tests.
Yeah.
In either case, it sounds like maybe like the engagement of someone from the biological research community might want to get involved with the SBO.
Yeah, definitely. There are regular open meetings of the SNOMED working groups, and both on the content side and on the technical side. You know, the fact that no one here, besides myself, has actually participated in those is a problem with the way they're structured and when they're held and those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
I think Olivia's comment in the back.
Yeah, I would like to ask Brett. Apart from the licensing issues, what would be the problems with using SNOMED out of the box? Well, maybe except for a couple of terms that you don't like, but to annotate human diseases.
I don't know that there are any problems doing that.
You wouldn't even have to do anything to it?
We haven't done the exploration to know that.
And the
reason that we didn't, just to be clear, it's not that we have had a strong criticism of SNOMED. It was until I got here on, what day was yesterday?
Monday.
And we had a chance to talk to Kent that we knew that there was this movement towards, away from the licensing problem. But the licensing problem for most of us was a jailbreaker.
That's right.
I mean, we couldn't handle it. And now that we know that there is likely to be a positive resolution of that problem, it now makes sense for us to actually do those tests and say, can we use it? Nobody would be happier in the world than me. Well, maybe there would be some other people equally happy if we could use it out of the box. I have no problems with that. That would be a good outcome.
And I think it was the intent of the NLM more than go. Agreement that there not be a barrier, and so the fact that there is one is kind of disappointing.
So one of the things we talked about was a little, and Chris talked about a little bit too, was like, you know, I'm sure somewhere in there you refer to anatomical bits, or to chemicals, or to cell types.
Yes.
And to the extent that we could add, like Chris shows, that if you're talking about a neurophil, that there is a reference to neurophil in the cell type ontology, that would be good. Is that something we could like discuss with either the content and or the technical people?
Absolutely, because one of the things that we've been talking about, and Stefan has been involved in some discussions with myself and a few others about SNOMED's anatomy. SNOMED's anatomy section is something that needs to be. I mean, I've talked to. We had our first meetings with Cornelius Ross in 1998. The entire Kaiser modeling team for SNOMED went to the University of Washington and met with him about how do we coordinate SNOMED's anatomy with the FMA, NASA, as it was then, you know, 8 or 9 years ago. So this is a goal that we've had for a long time in aligning anatomy. It's just been derailed by, you know, reality of the situation over the last few years. But
now the FMA is open source, so that's a big step forward, which is also quite recent. Yeah, the licenses have been signed.
And so maybe answer your question. Some of these issues may be things that mean in order for this to sit effectively in the OVO Foundry, it needs to have some modifications made that would not allow us to use it straight out of the box. And yeah, it's just a matter of us exploring those. Where changes are acceptable to SNOMED, where they aren't, yeah, I think those.
Well, I think it requires more
examining the existing axes of snowmen and seeing where they either overlap with or could be potentially replaced by pieces that have already been developed. And this is, where's the biggest bang for the buck? I would guess that there are a lot of physiological functioning things, activities, things like activities of daily living, where oboe doesn't have any coverage whatsoever, and snowman has good coverage. On the other hand, if you get down to the cellular level, snowman is extremely sparse, except in a few isolated areas. So, there is opportunity for building on the strengths of oboe, assuming that we get the right mechanism for linking them up and not treading on each other's toes. I mean, the principles of committing to convergence and resolution of differences in meaning is a principle that we adopted in SCOMED in order to deal with the problems we had between the nurses and the doctors. I mean, if you think biologists and physicians creates a difficult problem, get a nurse and a doctor together talking about which one has the right view on a particular term. That's a tough one.
At our place, in some of the hospitals, they actually use separate systems. I mean, it's that extreme.
Yeah. So the cultural divides are things that we're trying to bridge.
You want to roll?
Okay. I have just mindless flotsam. And I think that the questions are, let's just say that these are a set of open issues that we have. When it comes to support, I wonder if all of a sudden you'd be creating a whole bunch of new people who would want to be operating on the ontology, and do you have the bandwidth for lots more eggheads coming in and making changes to the potential changes to the ontology, and I just want to acknowledge that we're all sensitive to being under-resourced, and we'd like to help any way that we could. And when I talk about future-proofing, my question was already answered. I thought when you originally presented SNOMED, I heard some of the people up here, the gods and the graybeards, saying that there were some things that they didn't really like about the overall architecture of it, and I think that I felt like they were sort of wondering aloud, is it something that we could really proceed with in the future? And I'll just let that hang in the air. What actions now, people? I would imagine that the most intelligent thing to be doing is to follow up with a face-to-face meeting. That seems like the most efficient and practical way to go, I would suggest. And I would hazard that we probably wouldn't be able to do it until the month of January or something on that time scale. And I will also say that we will do some test driving for our interest in infectious disease and do some reconnaissance into the system. And I'm just guessing that the NCDO could donate a little bit of time for doing that as well, or somebody in Rex's shop could be doing that. What other actions do we have? Is it about us trying to agree upon a time to meet, or do we just recognize that we have to meet? What do we do now?
And also, what should happen between now and when we do meet again?
Fair enough.
Action items.
So I suggest we have coffee. And then make a list of action items.
I didn't realize we had that option. There are cookies.
Yes, there are.
I've done a very good job. I shall reward myself with a cookie.
So I think the first action item is that someone has to volunteer to write to the SDO. I think I am willing to do that. Yes. And I've been talking about the social. And I also know that people are trying to run it. But they're not so interested. I don't think that's a problem.
Right.
They may be looking to see for people to help.
And are there people
Let me tell you why it's such a good idea.
Well, I'm most of those who do that.
Right, I'm just wondering, is there, you know, a leader of FMA? It sounds like you had to advocate for him. Is that the person to be able to say, it was an incredible value for us to do this?
I think that
I would just make all
right.
Okay, I just don't know what the SDO is like to cover the whole process or anything, but I do know that once I went over this, different things, it changed everything from academically. And No, I've never sold software, never tried to sell software. You know, so it was just absolutely fantastic. And I think that's the type of thing that the SDO should do. Yeah, and it changed everything for me in terms of research opportunities. So I can say that.
I could make that
okay.
Even though it's very new, there are already big changes.
Okay.
I'm pleasure to talk to her.
Ah, that was sad.
A report from the patient versus observable by a physician. And so in that sense,
you have a large head.
I mean, it's a sign.
They're all observations. They come in a good kind of way. They have to make a nice
They become fine. They don't help you.
Always a little bit. Well, they are within your observations. That's my kind of even though I travel with you. But that's a difficult problem. But they are represented as classes in oncology. Because doctors don't want to see that as relations. They want to be able to get the semantic type findings and get all that and put them at the back of the system. And that increases the confusion because it's not helpful to see them as relations. It's more helpful to read by doctors.
Most of the stuff you've got to hide. It's hard enough just to get them into a big list. Much less just want to dictate a few text.
So the So we have. And then the next level up is, I guess you would call it interpretation relative to meaning of this.
And it's what
team norms say, and you're going to say, okay, this animal has no blood.
That would be just a separate independent measure.
Well, the measurement is what, you know, and
But what could actually go ahead and happen with that? And that's why
the cancer here.
No, this is this is a measurable a product of red cells. If your inference is that there's no red cell, then the next step would be going to red cells.
Where that line is, it's really what you're really saying. This is the line. This is the forward relative to
You compare your measurements to some.
So that's the big, so maybe two trades.
So you end up with just a similar situation. One of the things that people want to do is again to test this. We can take diagnosis and then we can develop compare with what you're doing here and say, okay, in this case with this diagnosis, how frequently does this EQ pair? And then we can start to come up with numbers that actually represent that. So you could have a statistical description of that. Is that the seed comes from, you know, go process or from Natty or from some OO found seed ecology, and the cube comes from Pesach. Yeah, that's the trivial answer.
That's
but,
right.
But what we need to do is start to say where does that work? Parsing that, we need to, I mean, the listener said, you know, here's an animal in phenotypes, right? We can't describe these animals.
Something that could be useful would be to try to use the cube or the whatever to represent the 20,000 symptoms that you have in ALS, for example.
Exactly. Those are
if you can fit them there,
yep.
You are if not, by being troubled. So a lot of the 20,000 are troubled, and maybe a couple thousand that are
and in fact, the disease ecology that we have, for the most part, actually belongs, not in terms of structure, but the term for term, I think the immediate goal is to make them exactly the same. That's an immediate goal. But I think actually the terms, if you look, 80-90% of terms already are examples. And so, we're already 90% of the way there. And then the issue is, in this, I think you can go ahead and annotate, while all the rest of the world argues about what the relationships are. And you should. That's why I keep saying, you know, maybe we don't break the
I think you're doing a great job.
Thank you. Which we can take out of
the worried about the success of the meeting until you stopped it. But now I'm not worried anymore. And I will give myself full marks. Yes, but the goal that I would like to realize initially, since the disease, contributing disease in snowmen is quite good, the overall architecture is a problem, but the what we've learned from the whole is that you can change the architecture quite radically, but still the fact is compatible because the termites are all the annotations are especially termites. So in the long run, I am quite optimistic that you can get some in a good architecture.
There's a promoter, as in it actually physically exists.
And then there's a bug.
That's all one of the reasons I'm not interested in
doing this.
That's a mistake.
And I went, oh my God.
That's just silly thinking.
I don't remember it, I might have been misinterpreting something, but all of a sudden that's when I went, oh my God, these guys are at a level of elevation or loftiness.
In this case, you're the taxi driver with Sarah.
Okay,
so I will email you about it. I would not like to express Wynn myself about this, but I'll email you over the night here. Because I don't know him.
Just get him out of South Africa.
I can't do anything, but I have to admit we could, and I just don't know.
And he told me flat out he doesn't want to do it. I just think he drives me. Very small number of tasks, I believe, and so we could be in the cab and heading towards the airport and on our way to enlightenment before you know it. We've already have agreement that there will be some evaluators of the SNOMED system. People have been volunteered from the following organizations. I think Rex is aware of that. And Sandy will also, will participate in that process. So most of these things that I'm going to list are all, the expectation is we will make progress on them prior to a face-to-face meeting, which is coming.
There are volunteers for evaluators?
Yes, we will take
there's
more
certainly
volunteers.
No harm in that. Yeah, sure, sure.
So can you explain again what the evaluators need to do?
I just want them to kick the tires. So if people have elaborations on that, do you have a request of what the evaluators would do?
Well, I would say what they need to do is think about what their uses for disease ontology are.
Right.
And ask the question, is SNOMED, mm-hmm. when they use SNOMED,
yes.
what works for them? Are there things that don't work for them? And report back on that. I think
right.
that's what we need to do. And
right.
I think
right.
the best outcome would be everyone does this and finds out SNOMED's perfect for us.
Right.
Probably not.
Could we keep the list of questions they ask? Because after one of the things that,
sure,
no, serious,
sure,
one of the things methodologically that gets lost in a lot of these.
You know, Alan, you seem to feel very strongly about this, and I think I track why, but would you like to sketch out the types of questions that we'd be asking?
As far as I know, there's some people here who are using this for annotation.
Mm-hmm.
There was a talk this morning on networks. I have no idea exactly what they want to do with the disease ontology.
Right.
I simply don't know whether they would have applications.
Right.
I don't know what some of the other people are doing with it.
Right.
But when we take something for this,
yes.
I mean, we've just been through the experiments with doing this specifically for what on top of the materials we're going to use for. The ontology to drive our big cancer repository,
yep.
where we've got a number, and we assume that we would be using the NCI, and indeed we are primarily using
right.
the NCI or
right.
fragment of it.
Right.
But we actually we had a set of test cases provided by the doctors who were setting up the repository.
Okay.
We wanted to be sure that they could actually answer those questions.
Right.
And the request to expand those essentially.
Right.
And the other thing that people wanted to do was whether they could find things.
Yeah.
How easily they could, so there was a question about whether it was there, there was a question about they could navigate it.
Right.
And then there was a question about whether the retrievals, in this case, the retrievals were very important. So the
right.
question is, are the hierarchies, if you ask for all of the breast cancers,
yeah.
do you actually get all and only breast cancers back?
Right, right.
If you ask for all of the autoimmune diseases of the kidney or whatever it is that you're concerned mm-hmm. with, are those there?
Right.
Could you take this? And I would expect, the other thing I would expect at this point would be to sketch the boundaries, because I'm absolutely certain that you will find that at some point SNOMED's detail simply runs out in the genetic areas and the areas that you're very interested in, not for any. And that's not a criticism of SNOMED at all.
Right.
It's just, if there have just been 20 new genetic variants of type 1 diabetes, I can be absolutely certain they're not in SNOMED.
Right.
And so being able to document and say, well, actually, when these things come out, we know we have to deal with them. Most
right.
of which is fairly common sense.
Right.
If you're trying to set up a process
in which you
actually manage these things, then you need the things that you might, things that are that work, things that might be errors, things that you know you're going to have to add.
Right.
Well, I think all of those things are actually very valid and true. And I think what you're trying to point out is we all know them, but it would be good to have them written down. I mean, because I'm sure that Richard, that's exactly what you would do. And I know I'm pretty sure that's what Rex and I have been talking about at various times. I'm pretty sure that that's the whole thing for the HIV. It's like, would all the terms you need, how sufficient is it? And the whole thing is to do an evaluation to answer those questions. And so it would be good to have the questions down in writing. Do you want to volunteer?
I mean, I'm not, because this is not my area, but I think the setting up a mechanism so that those things are captured.
Mm-hmm.
This is just coming from a software
requirements background,
right.
Saying that when you capture yep. requirements, you write them down so you can go back later
yep.
and then tick them off.
Well, maybe we can put, maybe we're basically more clearly defining what it means to be an evaluator. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we've got four evaluators here in the room, yep. or groups, right. Maybe five, who knows how many, but groups that would actually, and I guess I can't have to count us too, right, yeah. Nicole? So we've got people who would do that, and I think what we would have to do to come back and report at this, we have it on their time for the next meeting.
Yeah, you're not supposed to read that.
We've got NGI, we've got we've got Flybase.
So that everybody could do it and like say, I took it, I tried to use it.
These are the 10 questions I tried to answer.
Right, and it, you know, I needed more granularity, or if there was a missing parent.
And Richard should be doing,
you know, our problem.
Yeah, so we'll have, but everybody, when they come next, we meet again face to face, they should have how they did their evaluation. What were the questions they tried to answer?
And if you actually can put that together, you could, the reward for that is a couple of good papers.
It's not what motivates me, but
that motivates people or not, but we need to move this from anecdote to evidence.
Yes.
And that's really what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One of my real concerns is to move this whole field from anecdote to evidence.
Right, and so I think that is a good thing, that when we come back to the meeting, when people provide their evaluations, to have it in a persistent form.
So who's going to write the questions so we have them in?
I think it should be each of the individual.
Yeah, I think you
I question. Think each evaluator.
We try and
do what you want to do.
Our use case.
Yeah.
And then we'll see. There'll be intersections.
What the use case is and what the result is, what the outcome is.
Right.
Right. So everybody, you know, but just write down how you did your evaluation. Right. What you tried to have, you know, here was the test that you were going to, you know, your assay. It's like an experiment. Mm-hmm. It's an experiment.
It's OB.
Write your, you know, you design your experiment and you say, this is how I'm going to assay the answer. And you write it down in your methods.
But in the context of the OB intelligence.
Yes. Yes, that's right. Put it in the context of OB.
Okay. Let the record reflect that there should be some contact that's made to SNOMED's SDO, and Barry has volunteered to make that initial contact, and I think that that's enough for our start between now and probably the next time that we reconvene. I still think it's an open question of exactly what the overall approach will be, but we'll let him do some reconnaissance in that area and report back.
If Kent's willing, he can provide some significant guidance.
I'm not going to do it without guidance from you and Kent.
Okay.
And you mentioned that there were two different kinds of meetings. There were technical and there were content.
Well, the meetings all occur in one place at one time, but there are technical groups that deal with technical issues like, you know, what description logic, what kinds of software engineering kind of approaches do you take, and then questions about what's the difference between a finding and a disease.
Right. Usage.
So we call that content.
Okay,
so maybe, I'd like to volunteer at least a second person. It may end up being me for the technical as well. I'd like to come to
meetings are held and
the plan for the next meeting, I believe, is February. I'd probably be the source of information, the most immediate source. If you give me 5 minutes, I could probably locate it.
Okay. So you don't feel like it's fully resolved that you'd like to have a team of
I think it would be good to have a team, just because a lot of times, especially if you're new to an area and you come into a meeting cold and you're trying to absorb a lot of material, mm-hmm. you can't be listening and writing it all down at the same time, and just to have two heads there. Mm-hmm. Helps, don't you?
In order to be productive at the meetings. If people are thinking of attending the SCOMED meetings, it would be good to sign up for the listserv and get access to all the documentation and materials that are available there.
Yeah, we're going beyond the scope of, I'm interested in a representative of this community, the disease ontology community outside of SNOMED, making contact with the SDO specifically for the purpose of saying, we love you and we'd like to encourage you to go to a more open licensing system or issues having to do with licensing.
Well, that's, you've given to Barry.
That I'd like, and I think I heard from Susie that she'd like to see one more person involved in that. Oh, is that right?
Yeah, right. I think so. It wasn't just the, because I was interested not just in the licensing thing, but also just in how the content, the process, and the technology.
Mm-hmm. So I think we can just encourage those of us
Are there going to, I mean, I don't think it'll be insurmountable, given, I think the social problems are always the bigger thing, like in making the decision, but just the technical end of it, like how much handshaking is that going to take?
Okay, so that's sort of the administration of the system, right? You would like to see more than one party addressing the issue of just talking to them about how overall administration of different activities are going.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And why wouldn't that be you and Rex, for example?
Well, so I would be more interested in content. I'm probably less qualified for the technical side. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, between the two of us, you can sort it out.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Now, I also imagine in the discussion that's made by Barry about contacting and requesting a greater level of openness, I don't know. We do have some specifications. We do have some preconceived ideas of what we need in terms of this being an open access system. Is it necessary to write up those notions of what we mean by that, or is that going to get handled by your inroads?
I would think it should get handled. I mean, because I think agreeing with what Ken said, we shouldn't just, nail a list of a declaration on the door.
No, I
think
it
should be just a discussion.
Okay.
I think we all know where, I think those of us that have been involved with OBO for a while know what our goal would be, and what we need to do is just have an open discussion about how close to that goal can we get, what issues might SNOMED have or SDO have in terms with those requirements. And there's going to be give and take.
Okay.
So no lawyers are brought in.
Okay.
I have a feeling that's why we didn't get the outcome that we all wanted for the licensing as it is now.
Yeah.
Right. It would be nice to take the current content of SNOMED in the spirit of giving it a test drive and convert it to an OBO format.
Yeah.
Is that the right word?
Yeah.
So we need a volunteer for OBOification. Thank you, sir.
Was there ever any doubt?
prepped, and I had just crossing my fingers.
Now,
if you saw his paycheck, right?
let's assume that the exact content of the meeting, the agenda that would be set for the meeting, the parties that would attend the meeting would get developed between now and when there will be a meeting. There is universal agreement that we should have a meeting face to face, and we will now
pause.
We have all kinds of meetings.
Right.
What kind of meetings?
This is to go over the results of the evaluation process.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
And I would think in parallel what might be happening is Barry's discussions and our discussions on the technical content side would feed into that as well.
Right.
And I think that by then we should have the new DOE in a visible form and its degree of compatibility with SNOMED then in a visible form, so that we have something that we can do hands-on work with.
That's actually trivial. I mean, in the part that we haven't released, we've got all those links there. Now, I've been bold.
Okay, so are you volunteering to?
Yes.
Okay, good. Because I have a feeling that today at this meeting, we advanced too little along the lines of actually creating
a disease ontology. So what we have now is a roadmap to create a disease ontology.
It's yeah. done. All we
but
have to do is finish
it. But I think it has
I'm worried.
Yeah,
we've gotten over a huge social barrier. And
yeah, exactly.
Maybe not barrier, but some type of barrier. I'm excited. Now, there are still lots of issues about what the agenda would be, what the preparation would be. Is it reasonable to discuss, despite all those out there issues, when the meeting would be?
Well, so there. Let me just throw this out. I mean, there is a disease ontology discussion group.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's what we've used for our disease ontology, but this sounds like a perfect discussion forum for it. It's just the diseaseontology.sourceforge.net mm-hmm. and go and sign up to the, and I would say everybody, all the communications about mm-hmm. future meetings, results, can go there.
All right, and Kent, you'll be able to give any hand-holding to anybody who's doing the evaluation as far as making sure they get the stuff, and also sending them the link to documentation? And
yes, I'll
okay.
And I'll actually, what I'll do is also work to smooth the path with the powers that be on making these all available to you, because, I mean, I know we've, people have approached SNOMED in the past and got variable results, and I feel like in order to smooth it out, somebody has to step in and just make sure it happens smoothly.
Right.
So if you have any interaction with CAP whatsoever that is unsatisfying to you, please let me know.
Well, we should CC you on all correspondence.
Yeah, I'll work.
Yeah, I mean, and we should as well.
Okay. One thing I was going to say is this is partly to feedback on our experiences, both with the evaluation and also just with the contact, and you know, if we meet with them. And if the meeting's in February, that means that the other meeting would be after that one. I mean, when we next, is there a
what meeting is February?
You said the SNOMED technical and content meetings would be there.
Right.
Would be then.
And where is it?
I was going to say Chicago, but I'm not sure.
Hey, we could piggyback it. Seriously. We could just do it right afterwards.
You know the dates, Ken?
I'm going to look them up because I think it's right here in Chicago.
And you said you have a very, very strong sentiment that people from the clinic also have to be there. Another very, very important set of use cases. Where will they be at the Chicago meeting?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So that would be another plus. They say, oh, they're already here. Stay another day or two. And I know it's really far for you. Do you think you'll be able to...
Yes.
Great.
Aren't constituents that use SNOMED going to be puzzled by a meeting of people that are there saying, could we use this for disease ontology, when they would say, this isn't disease ontology? What are you talking about?
Well, I think we need to do our homework so that we don't go in like a bull in a china shop and mm-hmm. say
yeah.
things that we shouldn't be saying.
Yeah.
All about doing this in mm-hmm. respect.
That's why, yeah, that's why the evaluation. And also just for you guys, I mean, is this enough time? It's now November.
I think
November,
that might,
December, January.
I think to say in general, to have a meeting in towards the end of February sounds reasonable, but, you know, there are holidays in the way and things
yeah,
that
yeah, that's what I was just wondering. I mean, this may not be such an easy exercise to yeah. really do a good...
Okay, so... 5, 6, and 7 of February.
All right, so at the beginning of February.
Will be the SNOMED International meeting.
Maybe we should just say that we will try to schedule a meeting of this group sometime after that. And then start to work on a date together.
That's me. I'm sorry. I'll get it later.
You're ready to punt on an exact date.
Well, I mean, are people really ready to say right now, oh, we're going to do this on such and such a date?
I see one no. That looked like a no.
What about March? I mean, we could say a month.
Yeah, I suppose that. I said the end of February.
March,
or, yeah,
okay, March.
I have to get back.
Okay, great. And can anyone think of a March meeting?
Oh, we could do it on.
Where?
I mean, trying to break.
I think it's great. It simplifies that.
Yeah, it's too bad the regular SNOMED one is so early in February. Oh, well. I think the fly conference is towards the end of the month, so if you want to go meet a bunch of DeSalvo people.
It is, I have confirmed it is Chicago somewhere. Somewhere in Chicago, through the 7th of February.
Well, that makes it very easy for me.
Yeah. Well, you should go.
Oh, he's
I will.
Yeah, yeah. You should definitely go.
Okay. I think we've agreed on March, and I think we're just going to let the exact time and place hang in the air. And I don't know if there's any other action items.
Well, so we've already had several volunteers. So, you know, Barry's volunteered, Susie's volunteered, mm-hmm. I volunteered. Who else wants to volunteer to sort of be just sort of an organizing committee to move forward with this? Richard? No, you okay? Okay, so that's anybody else really wants to do that, but I would say that group of six people can be an organizing committee just to move forward.
Lynn,
sure.
Please volunteer. Thank you.
So did we get that list? So it was Dan.
Yeah, it was.
You
can't write this way. It's just like my grandmother. Anybody? Yeah, this is for the.
Well, Barry.
Oh, Barry.
So, you know, one of the things that Owen mentioned was establishing some kind of official designation.
What do you mean?
Well, this is just like a society or something like that.
Oh, right.
And we just recently did this with flow cytometry, and it was amazing how useful that activity was. And it was just done at the drop of a hat. We said, okay, we came up with a name, established a society, put up, you know, an email list. And a website, and now we have all these people wanting to join this society and contribute. Mm-hmm. Whereas before that, it was mm-hmm. It was amorphous, and there was really no way to coordinate these mm-hmm. kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So I mean, I was amazed at how much that assisted in bringing the community together.
Right.
I think I'd sort of like to save that for the next.
Maybe that could be a major the next meeting. It may not even be necessary.
I think we should start a society for the protection of the existing disease ontology with rheumatism in their exact place.
Okay. Well, how we do it? Did everybody
obviously
get something out of
it? Hopefully it's not in
Snowbat. Olivier, do you have anything to add? No? Was it? Nothing? Okay. I'm spotting the people in the back of the room who are doing their email. I mean, Jeff, do you have anything to add or any outcomes that you had hoped for? Or is this going to work for you, at least for the time being?
You know, I think what we're really interested in is also the phenotype.
Yeah. Which is next month. We will get to signs, symptoms, and phenotypes. And
mm-hmm. Someday I'll offer
something. And may I offer an invitation to you to please come to the phenotype meeting on December 1st and 2nd in lovely Stanford.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yep.
December 1st and 2nd.
Yep. All of you? You're all. If you go to the NCBIA homepage, there's a link there to a wiki page, and there's a link from there to a registration thing. Or you can just send me an email, because it's and that works too. All right.
Shall we adjourn?
Safe journeys.
I move adjourn.
And thank you for doing the final sessions.
Right.
Thank you to Owen.
Yeah.
Thank you. And thank you to Sandra.
Yes.
Yes.
I wanted it yesterday. I said it again just now.
You know, it's really a very rapidly developing object model that's coming out and everything. So it's